right, boys and girls, welcome to Red Ice TV. Good to have you here. My name is Henrik. Thank you for tuning in. Always a pleasure having you with us. We have another great show lined up for you today. Jason Kessler is here. He joined us actually a few months ago. Six weeks ago for the Charlottesville demonstration. He, of course, was a big part in organizing there, if not the prime organizer. And so today he's back with us for a kind of a full-length interview, and we can really go into depth on some of the things that we didn't have time to discuss last time. So, Jason, thanks for coming on.
Hi, good to be with you, Henrik.
Excellent. Thank you for being here. Now, you've done some great work recently I want to get into. You've touched on the Antifa problem. You, of course, have battled that yourself in Charlottesville. But tell us first, how do you think the event last time in Charlottesville turned out?
Well, first of all, I didn't actually organize that first event. I covered it as a journalist. You know, of course, that I did a little bit of an intro to it for Red Ice. I also wrote an article on it for Daily Caller. I was alerted that the event was going to happen maybe a month or so beforehand when I went up to Washington, D.C. to cover the alt-right's protest of Donald Trump's Syrian missile strikes. I think that it was a pretty effective event. You know, the torch-lit optics obviously were very controversial, but it made international headlines. So you can see here there was a daytime rally, which was attended by a good group of folks, hundreds of people, maybe about 200 and even more came at the nighttime rally. It's interesting because the lasting mainstream media narrative was that, oh, this was a KKK rally, this was meant to intimidate, et cetera, et cetera. But everything I ever heard from the rally organizers was that this was a funeral procession for the fallen dead of brother wars, the Civil War. This is a Civil War monument, Robert E. Lee, you know, World War One, World War II. They were saying they're just tired of European people killing one another in these pointless wars.
Well, I mean, it's ridiculous that they don't see any of the nuances in this. And of course, it all spiraled out of control the day after, where you attended another event. Tell us what happened the day after this event.
Yeah, the next day, the liberals, this Black Lives Matter Vice Mayor Wes Bellamy, who has had all these tweets saying violent and hateful things about white people and was actually removed from the Virginia Board of Education, the liberal Board of Education, that's how bad he was. They held a rally with hundreds of people the next day, and the media tried to portray it like it was a peaceful rally, but we had one dude who was in the crowd live streaming it, and he's a young guy. He's a friend of mine. I thought he would be safe, but I saw these people smacking at his phone, calling him a Nazi, screaming at him. I went over there to make sure that he was safe, and I got mobbed by hundreds of people. You can see this banner in the video here where they had hung up a Black Lives Matter, F white supremacy sign. So when I got there, I was really offended by this because, you know, my ancestors are Confederate veterans. So I pulled down this banner. And at that point, these people just flipped out. They were spitting on me. They were sticking their middle fingers in my face. They grabbed the phone of this journalist who was live streaming it, threw it at a cop, bloodied the cop's head. And after all this, the police arrested me for disorderly conduct. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. So I heard kind of through the grapevine, I guess, that the cops are not very supportive of you now for that reason?
Well, they're off and on. It's funny because they are controlled by the liberal city council, which is basically like an Antifa city council. It's the East Coast Berkeley in a lot of ways. Some of the police are good to us. Some of them aren't. I think they've been giving new directives recently where city council has been calling the alt-right and even Proud Boys terrorist groups. And if we just go out onto the downtown mall for drinks, we have like 10 police officers swarming the area. And it's difficult to say what is going on because you can see there are hundreds of people that show up just when we go for beers. This is the night after Tiki rally, but we have similar things happening all the time. And there's so many left-wing lawyers, so-called civil rights lawyers, who will allow these people to get away with this stuff based on free speech, but yet they'll arrest our people for the slightest infractions.
Yeah, it's amazing. Is this driven by Bellamy, the mayor, or what's like, there must be like a top-down approval of some of this behavior, right?
Well, a lot of it is done by Bellamy and his anti-white rhetoric. There's also a group called Surge, which is effectively an Antifa group. It's called Showing Up for Racial Justice. And they're also in Berkeley, by the way. And this group is pretty much all like white or Jewish liberals. And they are extremely nosy. They're always talking about people of color, et cetera, but they don't really have any black people in their group. And at events like these, like if you have a black person walking through the area, they'll say, what are these crazy white people doing? They don't understand why these liberals have lost their minds.
They don't understand why we're not taking our own side and saying, you know what, I'm standing up for my people and my group, right? It is insane. It's absolutely insane. Now, you, of course, did a video on the Antifa, kind of breaking that down a little bit, talking about some of their tactics, which was very interesting. I think it's very important to understand how they operate. But I think the big takeaway for me there in your expose of them was just how organized they are to be in a position where they are set up to do illegal activities. Of course, that's why they cover up. That's why they're all dressed the same and can run in and hide and basically disperse among, you know, unbeknownst people that are there just to kind of, you know, fight Nazism or something. But it's a very effective strategy, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I did that video based on research from other people's articles, but a lot of it was from my firsthand experience going out there doing activism, doing journalism, because I've had several instances where I've tried to go up and document these Antifa, and they use these tactics where you think you live in a free society where you have freedom of the press and you can film them, but they flip out. They will not only wear all black so that they're sort of indistinguishable from one another, but when they want to like steal your phone or they want to do a mob beatdown on you or whatever, they'll encircle you and they'll start screaming and waving signs in your face so you're distracted. You're like, what's going on? And at that point, they'll have another person come up and grab your phone or punch you or whatever they're going to do. And I talk a lot about that in the video.
Yeah, this happened, of course, MPI, some of the people that we had helping us trying to get outside and report, you know, from the event or whatever. And people, of course, have to watch their backs. They can't be naive about this. There's, I don't know how many like deadly encounters that's been, but you did mention, of course, that people have been stabbed and things like this, and people can be beaten by these mobs to a point where, of course, they don't recover in a good way. Do you know if there's been many, like, really, really violent incidences in America?
I mean, certainly several of the things in Berkeley have involved mob beatdowns and people being hit with implements and so forth. And yeah, you're right, some people have been stabbed. These are usually in urban centers where you have a, let's say, diverse population. They come in there after like a cop has shot a suspect, and they use that as their justification to, you know, destroy property or actually commit real violence against people. But in all honesty, most of the time you deal with Antifa, they are trying to avoid trouble with the law. So that's why they wear all black, and that's why they work in groups. They will do everything they can up to the point that they think the police won't arrest them. Like, they'll do things that are technically illegal, like noise violations, so that they can deplatform. Anytime you have a right-wing speaker who is trying to just exercise their First Amendment right, these guys will come up with sirens and bullhorns, and they'll scream in your face and all this other stuff, and they'll come up against you and start like bumping you. The night after the Tiki Torch rally, when I was trying to leave the park, one thing that they did is they did that encirclement thing, like I was mentioning earlier, and they said, lock your arms. So that's illegal. That's abduction. But good luck getting the police to press charges against them.
It's like I don't know what to call it, Jason, like a kind of pack of hyenas or something circling the prey, you know, like
they're
vultures.
They're not individualistic, you know, they're communists. They work in a hive mindset. You can't really get a decent argument out of them. Whenever I see right-wing speakers, like when I was in D.C. and I saw Spencer and I saw Enoch and some other people speaking, they were trying to make cogent points to these people. Whereas every time I see Antifa, they just chant the same thing, no racist KKK, hey, that kind of thing. And they'll go on and on for like 2 hours. It's it's like a thought purging mantra.
Yeah, exactly. It's like mind control. They're subtly trying to put a spell on you or something. Yeah. And of course, it can be obviously very destructive disruptive. But is there a point really trying to address the issues that our concerns and convey the issues that we don't want to kill these people. We're not about, like, you know, dominating them or anyone else really. It's like more about us being in a position we can control our own lives. We can choose who we want to associate with and live with. We are concerned with the demographic replacement, all these issues that are a very valid point in any population that has these concerns. They don't have any problem with them having it, but it's a problem when we have it. But is there a point trying to convey these messages to them, do you think?
I don't think that it's worth trying to argue with the Antifa. I think the Antifa help us more than anything else. They are the worst form of the liberal intimidation. That's what liberals want, is they want to keep us from being able to show up to events like the alt-right's rally in front of the Lee Monument or other rallies around the country. Because once people start being unafraid, once they start being brave and showing up to these events, then the mainstream media, the establishment, has lost all of its controlling power over people, because that's all they're trying to do, is just tell you, you're racist, you're racist, you're racist. And people fear for their jobs, they fear for their families and all these things. But the more people who step up, the more that it destigmatizes white advocacy, the way that it destigmatizes taking your own side, and we'll be able to push back against them. The Antifa are the most clumsy form of that intimidation, because they're trying to use physical and violent intimidation, and it makes them look bad, but they really can't help themselves.
So what about the connection that, you know, Soros might be behind these groups, that this is an active plan to, I don't know, disrupt American politics, that this is a very highly organized political movement at the end of it? Is there any truth to that, do you think?
In some cases, a lot of times these are just confused trust fund commies, essentially. They're people with a lot of money who don't understand what it's like to be actually a working class person. They don't represent the working class. But certainly there are a lot of groups like IWW who are funded by George Soros and those type of groups. So there's a chain of command where Soros will fund groups that are a little bit more respectable, and those groups will fund blatant communist groups like IWW, and then IWW will give money down to literal Antifa groups like BAM.
Yeah, because I was thinking if it can be proven, I mean, obviously they are politically engaged, this is a political activity, but I mean, that would take it into the realm of terrorism, wouldn't it, in a way?
Yeah, essentially. They're just very smart, and they launder their money through different organizations.
Let's talk a bit about another issue. We can return to, I know you have some upcoming stuff in Charlottesville, and this time you'll be one of the main organizers, I guess, right?
Yes, I will be the organizer for this one. Basically, after that rally, the left-wing media across the country started defaming this rally, trying to criminalize the free speech of the peaceful alt-right demonstration. They started hounding not just right-wing people, but like rhinos and conservatives, regular Trump supporters, getting them fired from their jobs, listing their home addresses so that people came by where they had young children, and trying to intimidate the families. And they would say, "Know your local Nazi." And they'd be putting up all these stuff. And these people are just sort of slightly more red-pilled conservatives for the most part. None of these are people who even went to the alt-right rally, but they did these terrible things. So I decided, screw you, I'm going to invite Richard Spencer back, and I'm going to invite a lot of other red-pilled speakers that you liberals are not going to like. This is our First Amendment right, and we're going to exercise it in your space. This is your city, and it's going to happen where you live.
So what do you expect from this in terms of counter demonstration and organizing? Is it going to be pretty messy, do you think, or what are we expecting here?
I have no idea, really. The city council is very worried about it, and I've had police officers sent to talk to me about it. They want to know what's going on. I really don't know. There are certain groups that are trying to keep the liberal or Antifa, whatever you want to call them, groups away by holding other events. But the hatred is so strong of Richard Spencer and Mike Enoch and myself in this area that they're not going to be able to control all of them. There's going to be people probably from D.C., from Philadelphia, from Richmond, Virginia, certainly, that will come and try and start something. And there could even be infiltrators, because I think that they are getting scared of the kind of numbers and the bravery of right-wing and nationalist activists at this point. It's a real threat to the establishment. The GOP itself in this area has sort of been in a fissure where there are people who are willing to talk about our demographic displacement, the white genocide issue. There are people who are willing to talk about being pro-white, since there are advocacy groups for Muslims and Jews and gays and Hispanics and everybody else. And then there are some people who are like SJWs pretending to be right wing, and they're saying, no, just go along with the Democrats. We don't want any racist in this party. So that's something that's happening all over.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely schism. It seems to be very difficult for people that are more, they don't even have to be in a way exclusively like pronounced right wingers. It might just be antagonistic towards the left and what their activities are. They might not even know, you know, politically what they are. But there's always this denouncing of someone who's like slightly a little bit more edgy than they are and stuff. And that's, of course, a big problem. And we saw some of that recently with this, you know, Proud Boys debacle and that kind of stuff. There is one event upcoming this Sunday, which I guess fell apart. I don't know if it was over the Posobiec thing or issue or something like that. Do you know what the origins of that? Why that fell apart?
Well, there's a lot of converging things that happened here. Basically, this guy, young guy, idealistic in the best way, named Colton Merwin, started a free speech rally basically for conservative and right-wing people. Some months ago, he contacted me. He was aware of my journalism and asked me to be one of the speakers. He started adding in some big-name people like Baked Alaska, Irma from Latinos for Trump. Let's see. As they were going along, he brought in this Laura Loomer woman from Rebel Media.
Yeah.
And he brought in Richard Spencer. And this is what the conflict was. This Laura Loomer woman said that she would not be at a rally with Richard Spencer, and Jack Posobiec said the same thing, because they said Richard Spencer is anti-Semitic. And myself and Colton and these other people said, look, if you can't support controversial speakers, then you shouldn't be at a free speech rally. This isn't for people to stand up and say, oh, rah, rah, America. No one's going to have any problem with that. That's not controversial speech. We need to protect the rights of speakers like Richard Spencer. And frankly, I think Richard Spencer has a lot of valuable things to say. There's sort of some additional drama. This Laura Loomer woman evidently has been a big push to her from this alt-light mafia, I would call them, which is like Jack Posobiec, fake news Mike Cernovich, Jeff Giazzo, and several other folks. They planned this thing where they set up this free Laura.com website, mm-hmm. and then they had her go and interrupt this Shakespeare in the Park thing where they're pretending to kill Trump. And it was a coordinated affair to push her as the next big thing. And she just sort of got a swelled head about it and decided, well, I've been invited to this free speech rally. I'm a big star now. I can tell Richard Spencer to screw off, or I'm gonna boycott your event and do a separate event.
Yeah, that was interesting because, of course, there was some issues there where, as you said, I think the Rebel, they set up the website, 4 hours before the event? I mean, obviously, yes, of course, they knew that this was going to be an opportunity, a kind of a stunt or whatever. The Rebel lost Lauren recently, so I don't know if they're trying to push her as this new Lauren or something like that. But,
yeah, exactly.
But, you know, so it's good. But it's a way to make some shekels and get in on it, and it's fine, I get it. But probably the fine that she was to receive, I don't even know if that's settled yet or what came out of that. Actually, I haven't looked into that yet. But there was a minor one in compared to what they were asking for the defense funds, basically.
Yeah, I mean, when I got arrested that night, that I pulled down that Black Lives Matter sign and so forth, I got a disorderly conduct and some folks raised some money for me. And when it reached the amount that I needed to get my legal services, which was like $1,500, I told them, shut it off. I don't need any more money. I don't want to be seen as rent seeking. But this woman is playing that game that a lot of people who are in it for the money do, where she's got probably $1,000 fine and she's raised $25,000 and she wants to keep going, see how much money she can get out of people.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a stunt and it's a debacle, of course. And then out of this then came this issue that they didn't want to speak at this event, and now there's all this, you know, schism. But again, maybe it's for the better. What I think is interesting here, though, is obviously that it was not Spencer that said, you know, I'm not going to speak with you because you're Jewish, right? It was the opposite way. It was like, okay, well, present your evidence then that Richard is this horrible anti-Semite. I'm not saying necessarily that he's overly maybe enthusiastic about that issue or whatever, but I'm just saying it's like the initial point of those that jump ship is, of course, them, not us. And this always seems to be the case. It's like, oh, we disown, we don't want to have anything to do with these horrible people. It's like, what's the problem? You don't have to agree with everyone. The left never does that. They never say, oh my God, there's communists here at the Democratic meeting, where let's denounce them, right? You just don't see that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I personally think that the First Amendment, for the most part, is one of the best amendments in the Constitution. And I think any society would do well to have a robust free speech and ability to peaceably assemble law like we do. You see places in Europe where it's illegal to say bad things about Muslims or whatever. And I think that's completely ridiculous. And I think all right-wing people should cherish the First Amendment and similar free speech laws around the world, because it's the only way we're going to be able to get our message out there. And it's a thin sliver that is keeping the government from cracking down on us in a lot of ways. And they try and do it anyway. When you have alternative media and you're nationalist or you're pro-white or whatever you are, even just like InfoWars, they'll try and shut down their revenue streams. All these YouTube people are losing their ability to make money because the establishment media is threatened by that message.
Yeah, that's true. It's a very volatile kind of position that we are in, of course, where we can't even voice our opinions and voice our concerns. And it kind of shows that this First Amendment thing is just a big ruse anyway. They can always find a way around it. And now this, you know, the PC hate speech kind of issues are coming into the situation. And it's very, very, very difficult, you know. But before we continue to talk about the censorship, let's just get this kind of issue of the Sobiech out of the way. I wanted to ask you about that, what happened there, because, of course, you linked up, you did a tweet on this where you have a YouTube doubler showing the different the videos side by side of what you did and what he did. And it even resulted in the Rebel, of course, issuing an official apology later, which was nice of them to do, I guess. But I think it resulted in the fire of Posobiec from the Rebel.
I'm not really sure why Posobiec was let go from Rebel. I mean, he was hired and then fired very quickly. And there's a lot of rumors and innuendo. It's been kept hush-hush. I mean, who knows how far the plagiarism stuff or any other impropriety is. I don't know why he was fired. But what happened was I did this article on Antifa, and then I did an associated video back in March. And then about a couple months later, somebody tweeted me and said, you got to check out this YouTube doubler where we put these two videos, your video and Jack Posobiec's video, side by side. And I looked at it, and he's saying the exact same thing as me, like word for word through like almost the entire video. And at the time, I was pretty miffed, and I contacted him about it, but there wasn't really much I could do. I didn't have any way to bring it out to people. Then I saw he and Laura Loomer try and denounce this free speech rally, which I think was done with the best of intentions, and then go in this hostile way after this young guy who had created the event, after Richard Spencer. And I said, now is the time I'm going to blow the whistle on Jack Posobiec's plagiarism. And it got retweeted by a lot of people who were paying attention to Posobiec and his shenanigans at that moment, to the point where I got a call from Canada, and it was the owner of Rebel Media, Ezra Levant, apologizing for Posobiec and saying, as the owner of Rebel Media, even he acknowledged that Posobiec had ripped off my material. Lots of people were asking Posobiec to publicly acknowledge and apologize for it, but he was spineless, in my view. He would not acknowledge publicly his fault. He even did several embarrassing periscopes denying it and then deleting those periscopes.
Yeah, he kind of showed up out of nowhere, this guy. And I know that a lot of other people have criticized him too for like, in some cases, it's like one of those, I don't know, 70-30 situation. Yeah, there's some good stuff, obviously, and there's some things in there which is true. But then there can be these just random outrageous issues. For example, one of the issues I remember raising was when Cernovich and him did this documentary about Sweden, of course, where the numbers and things, many things that they addressed in there was absolutely true. It was not that. But they had used, it was these weird things, they'd used footage from Lithuania overlap. And of course, they was kind of, they used their infographics and put that over. But basically, Heat Street did an article about it and said, oh, see, these people are just lying about Sweden. They can't even get the country right and stuff. And I just felt there was this unnecessary issue where you're like muddying the waters and you're making it easy for the left to say, see, these are just kooky right-wing conspiracies. None of this stuff is true. I don't know if that was intentional or whatever, but apparently they changed it later or something. But there's strange things like that. And it's just, why do it, right? Why not just get it right to begin with and leave it alone, right?
Yeah, I mean, they are good on some things. Posobiec and Cernovich are good on some things, and I used to be fans. But as I entered this business and started doing my own journalism, I just started noticing why people had a problem with these guys is because they do business in a shady way. I mean, I've had a friend who has written an article, and Mike Cernovich paid to put it on his website, but he changes like a few lines and then puts his name in the headline.
That's
so
right.
It's also Mike Cernovich who is putting out content by other people, you know, and putting his name on it. So I've just had bad dealings with Mike Cernovich. I've had bad dealings with Posobiec. And I remember when I was coming back from Washington, D.C. after the Syrian missile strikes thing, I was bored and I was listening to this stream by Mike Cernovich. And he was hysterical. He calls himself a journalist, but he was saying 150,000 troops are going to be on the ground in Syria. Mark my words. And it's been 3 months. I haven't seen 150,000 troops on the ground in Syria. And as bad as the mainstream media is, as liberal and anti-white, anti-nationalist as they are, somebody's head would have rolled if they had said 150,000 troops are going to be on the ground in Syria, and then they realize, oops, they're wrong. No apology, no retraction. They just don't acknowledge it again. But there's such a low bar for the kind of people who follow Mike Cernovich that they just let it go.
Yeah, and they're so prolific. It's just 500,000 things, and you know you're going to straighten that out afterwards. It's like we don't have the fucking time to like unnestle this like Gordian knot of things. But look at this headline, for example: alt-right hero Mike Cernovich. Right, that's a perfect example, obviously, of how you know the opposition is using. Exactly, they've denounced the alt-right. They're not alt-right, but they can say now, oh, these are the alt-right guys. And look at all this stuff that they're doing that's wrong, and it's muddying the water for us. It's difficult enough for us to, you know, talk about our message and stuff. If we get all this, I'm not saying that it's everything is intentionally wrong or whatever, but some things are just so strange and so just outrageous and over the top that one just must ask the question, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're right on a lot of things. And I think that behind the scenes, they know everything that people in the alt-right know, but they won't acknowledge them out of cowardice. That has been my general impression from talking to people like Mike Cernovich and so forth. And it doesn't really take that much balls to just say you're pro-white, for instance. You know, like, for me, I'm not against anybody else. You've said it on Red Ice, nationalism for all peoples. I think that all people have a right to exist. I think that if you really value diversity, you have to have strong immigration laws. Otherwise, you know, like Colombia, if a bunch of white people started going into Colombia, you know, from the United States, you might not have soccer anymore. You wouldn't have Latinos there anymore. You would have a lot of different cultural elements. Those people would not exist anymore. And the same thing is happening in the United States and Europe to European peoples.
Yeah, exactly. That's absolutely right. And it doesn't mean, as you say, it doesn't mean that we're in an antagonistic position towards these people. We just want to be in control of our own destiny and make sure that our children can live in the country that we grew up in, and that they can have a country which are, as Millennial Will said, our grandfathers and grandmothers took for granted, right? They had their way of life of just existing as they were has now been turned into something which is extremism, which shows how far the opposition and the left has pushed things to make very, very normal and sensible positions abnormal and seem hateful. It's just, it's amazing how much they pushed the envelope to the left, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And you know, it's just this tiny tweak that needs to be made to some of these people, and they'd be right. They bring up the Islamic attacks in Western countries. They bring up the fake hate crimes that they always try and pin on white people and all this other stuff. But then they shy away from saying that you should advocate for white people. Or if you're somebody else, let's say you're Japanese and living in Japan, you should advocate for the Japanese people. They might say that, but they won't say that it's okay for you to stand up for your own people.
No.
They don't want to be called racist. They don't want to lose out on the book sales, on the ad revenue. They don't want to lose out on, you know, having their favorite mainstream politicians endorse them. But it's serious business. Like I was writing about the white genocide issue in VDare. There's no time to wait. We have to fight for the existence of our people right now.
So let's talk about that article a little bit. Jason goes through, of course, the positions in a very sensible way in terms of how the UN defines it and stuff like that. Because it's always this issue, well, it's mass murder, that's what genocide means, and we're always back to that issue, and it's like some people have then argued, well, it's too strong of a word to use or whatever, but again, just according to the definition, that's what's happening. I mean, we have, in some cases, we have proof of organizations and groups and people working together to displace European people. I mean, it's come up many times that people want to prefer to see population replacement. And even, this is strange actually, because even the UN itself released a report talking about the solution to an aging population was population replacement, right? So then afterwards, if they even, you know, go look at their own definition, they would basically be violating that and say, and advocating for, you know, for genocide. It's strange, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm an advocate of using the white genocide argument. And I looked on some of the popular sites like Amrin and VDare, which I've written for in the past, and I didn't see one specifically talking about white genocide. So I said, this needs to be something that's on one of these premier alt-right sites so that people can use it as a reference when they're trying to red pill their friends and family about this issue. They can go to this article, and it's not written in a hyperbolic way. It's just stating the facts. Here are the demographics. Here are the replacement. Here is the percentage. You know, white people are going to be a minority in the United States and Europe by 2050. Meanwhile, you're going to have, you know, Africans are going to have their entire continent. Asians are going to have an entire continent. Latinos are going to have an entire continent. And we are not even allowed to have a country.
Yeah, exactly. It's true. It's very interesting because I'm going to pull up the actual population numbers here later too and show you guys what it is. But let's just actually go through that just quickly, Jason, and just read that off. So according to the 1948 Convention on the Prevention of the Crime of Genocide, they say then that what constitutes that is killing members of the group, causing serious bodily harm or mental harm to members of the group. And that's interesting too, mental harm. But, saying that white people are evil and stuff like that, is that mental harm? Well, maybe it is, right? Deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. And again, I would say when the Barbara Spector is talking about replacing, you know, the people of Sweden or Europe in the extension, that is a calculated, measure. They also say it's imposing measures to intended to prevent births within the group. Again, we're back to that. Is it mental harm saying that white people are evil so that people don't want to have kids anymore? You know, right? We can discuss this. And then lastly, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. That's maybe less likely in this case. But how do we prove this to someone who's listening and who's newcomer? What would you kind of rattle off as points of proof that this is the kind of stuff that actually is happening right now?
I mean, you can just look at the statistics of the demographic displacement. We've lost 15 million people in the United States alone over the last 10 years. And the population of Latinos has exploded. You can look at the funding that we're giving to Africa, and Clemson researchers have shown that it's directly tied to the population explosion in Africa. So we're taxing our own citizens so that they can't afford to have children, and then paying for other people's children. It's ridiculous. Also, you're right that there is a psychological harm that is being done to people by constantly telling white people, your history is evil, your people is evil, everything you have ever accomplished in life, you've cheated to get your murders and blah, 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 blah. So you look at white people psychologically and spiritually, and we're not allowed to identify with our own ethnic group anymore, and it's devastating. The rates of depression, the rates of suicide, the opioid epidemic, the poverty, the decreasing birth rates, these are all symptomatic of a people who have had psychological warfare perpetrated on them for about 50 or 60 years.
Yeah, that's right. This another report here out of Time that we're showing some of the footage from is talking about by 2050, by the mid-century here, it's going to be about close to 10 billion people. And the report goes on, of course, to detail also that the biggest drop and loss, despite the fact that it's, yes, there is a global, de-escalation on the fertility rate, I think, overall. But still, the highest drop is in Europe, and the biggest growth is some of the African countries. Nigeria is currently the most, is the highest, fertility rate that there is, basically. So, again, as you said, we have to consider, is this due to the imposition of the propaganda that we're subjected to all the time? What's at the root of this? I don't think it's just accidental, Jason, and this is just something that happens to happen. I mean, sure, there is such a thing as when you go through a industrialization, you become modernized, you turn into a developed country or whatever. Yes, it's true that the fertility rates tend to drop, but now, of course, they've gone below replacement level. Something else is going on. If we continue like this, I think the report said that people over 60 will like constitute 30 or even more percent by the by 2050. I mean, that's an aging population, right? I mean, that's in a way that's if we can prove that this is due to propaganda, then that constitutes genocide, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see from the way people react to the declining population of whites and the replacement with other peoples from around the world, there's two different reactions. There's people who say, so what? And there's people who say, good, I'm glad that they're being replaced. So you have, and this is among the liberals, of course, so the liberals, the globalist elite, the people who run the media in Hollywood, they are in some cases just implementing these policies because they have been indoctrinated and they've been given this almost Pavlovian response that when they see a group of white people, they think, oh, this is bad. These are evil people. They need diversity. Whereas if they saw like an NBA team that's all black, they'd be like, oh, how diverse, even though it's all black people. So that's part of it. A lot of people are just going with the flow. They want to be nice people. And they're like, well, why don't we help out these other folks? We've been told that they're oppressed and so forth. And they live in a bubble, which is very unique, where they see a lot of white people around them. But in a global perspective, we are a minority, and we're becoming an increasingly shrinking minority that's being cornered on all sides. So we have to be able to take our own side if we're going to counter that, because these people who are just going with the flow, their grandchildren and their great grandchildren are going to become increasingly displaced. Their culture, their values, everything is going to be gone if we don't fight for it now. And then certainly there are people out there, and it says it in the VDare article, there's quotes from a few people who say, look, whites were doing colonization and they were doing slavery. You didn't think that there was going to be some repercussion for this? White people deserve to be replaced. They deserve to be removed. So it's a split between those two factions. And the ones who are openly advocating for our removal are particularly racist towards white people, you could say, because white people aren't the only ones who have enslaved people. We're not the only ones who have fought wars of conquest. This is done by all peoples. So why is it that they're coming after us? They want to tear down our monuments. They want to rewrite our history books to blame us over and over again. And they do it to manipulate, because they've learned that using these shaming tactics and causing people to be afraid forces them to give up their rights, and they can take everything that they want from them that way.
That's right. Look at that headline. America's getting less white, and that will save it. I mean, it's just outrageous. We'll talk more about this after the break, Jason. But please tell us about the upcoming event. Please, you know, plug your website. It's jasonkessler.net. I don't know if there's any way that people can help you out, support your journalism, continue, and make sure that you can continue. What do people do if they want to help you out?
Sure. Yeah. My website is jasonkessler.net, and you can see my articles. I do a number of videos where I'm interviewing or confronting these ridiculous liberal, politically correct people. I've got a PayPal up. I've got a Patreon if you want to donate. You can follow me on Twitter at The Mad Dimension.
Excellent. Well, stay with us then, Jason. We're going to just take a short break here, and then we'll be back with more in the second segment. So stay tuned, everybody. We'll take a short break. We'll see you on the other side.